Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas.
KL7R, KL7R, near the Mendenhall Glacier in Alaska. From downtown London, this is M0HBR. How you doing, Mike?
Yeah, good morning. M0HBR, KL7R. You're sounding chipper this morning. I'm been under the weather here. The wife and son brought home a flu, and took me a few days to catch it, but I've got it. But I do have the soldering iron warmed up here, Bill. Over.
As a dedicated solder smoker, yes, viruses aren't going to stop you, Mike. Yeah, I had something yesterday, but I seem to have bounced back. I know I'm under the weather. If I get up into the ham shack and I don't feel like doing anything, and that was my situation yesterday. So I was just I had to resort to just updating website files and things like that. But I've bounced back a little bit this morning and saw your call here on the Echolink list and figured it was time for solder smoke. So what are you constructing right now, KL7R, M0HBR?
Yeah, solder smoke 21, as a matter of fact. Well, I did get that piece of circuit board and I mounted some stuff on it. I've got an LM or an SA612 and a voltage regulator and a switch and a bunch of transistors. I made the transmit chain of the TSK80 warbler as best I could with the parts I had. I didn't have the final amplifier transistors that he had. But I had a couple of CV transistors, and I put them in there, and I've got 5 watts coming out. Got a little story there related to that there. Over.
Wow, 5 watts coming out. That's fantastic. Usually it takes a lot more. For me, it usually takes a lot more suffering and burnt fingers and fried transistors and destroyed test equipment to get to that stage. So you're doing very well. Congratulations. And have you put it on the air? Has anybody heard it? You know, with telescopes, they have this moment called first light, and that's the title of Richard Preston's book about the Palabar Mountain Telescope. And it's called the moment of first light, when you actually expose the mirror to starlight for the first time. I think we should have a similar term for first on the air or first transmissions or first reception or something like that. It's a very momentous occasion. You know, with the receivers, it's usually a very dramatic moment, because you definitely know it's working when you suddenly hear that faint little bit of CW coming through. Transmitters can be more deceptive, because your meter could be telling you that you're transmitting, but you may be doing so. I'm sure that's not the case now, but you may be doing so on the entirely wrong frequency. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, this was really frustrating. I got a push pull amp on this thing, and I built it, and I got the SA612 oscillating, and then I built a buffer stage, which is two. 2N2222s, and then I put the push pull amplifier in line, and I put basically I just built what he had there, so I got it finished just seconds before the end of the motley group, which is on 3933 at 10 o'clock my time in the evening, and so I set my call sign and the guy in Seward, who normally can hear me under just about any conditions, said, "Yeah, I can tell you're there, and it sounds like KL7R, but you're dropping out, you know." And then a guy in Fairbanks came back and says, "Yeah, KL7R. He had no traffic, So then I checked in with voice, and I told him, yeah, that's a new rig. And he said, yeah, you're kind of weak. So I said, well, you know, he's usually he was plenty strong, and he's got a pretty good ear. And so I went looking, and I hitched up my W7ZOI meter that I made that does direct DBM output, and I figured I was putting out between 10 and 12 milliwatts. So I talked CW to Fairbanks, which is 600 miles away, on between 10 and 12 milliwatts. So if you calculate that out, that's something between 50 and 60,000 miles per watt there, Bill. Over.
Very good. Well, your comments, you made me reach over to the bookshelf, because there's a great article from one of the very early Sprats by C.F. Rocky, W9SCH. It's called Prolegomena to QRP Transmitters, a paper prepared for students of the New Trier Township High School. And he's got some really great quotes in here about the difficulty of getting a significant RF to the antenna. It says here, having completed a clean and stable VFO, the experienced amateur should have little difficulty in the other preliminary stages of a QRP transmitter. If reasonable precautions are taken as suggested, these stages are largely plain sailing. But the final power amplifier stage is something else again. Indeed, few amateurs build their first few RF power amplifier stages without having a tale of woe to tell about them. When setting up a first or even second or third solid-state transmitter, few amateurs will get by without sending a number of fancy and perhaps expensive transistors into solid-state Valhalla. This also seems to be the human condition, as theologians say. There's no doubt about it. It is the development of clean RF power in appreciable quantities that is the greatest challenge in this field to the average amateur. He goes on to note that, he's got a couple of other good quotes here. I'll dig through them as we go through this, because I really, it says here, things that you could do to prevent destroying the transistors. If the signal is accompanied by a hiss or seems to surround the signal, then you've got low frequency oscillations. Some people say those little ferrite beads strung on base or collector leads help this problem. Others recommend the ritual sacrifice of a chicken to Papa Legba. MKL7R, MZOHBR.
That's great. You've mentioned Papa Legba before, but you never read the story to me. That's great. Well, it turned out there's like four or five different things going on, and it was just really frustrating. I thought my test equipment had gone bad. I kept seeing all this garbage on my oscilloscope, and the 2006 handbook, it comes with a CD-ROM, and on the CD-ROM is a student edition of ELSI, which is a circuit design software for designing LC filters. So I built a filter, and I thought that was my problem, is that I was putting out junk on high frequencies, and I was seeing it. I was seeing it in my scope, and I thought, well, shoot, what's wrong? What's wrong with what I've done? I must need a low-pass filter. Well, that didn't work. I built a really nice filter. I'm really happy with the filter I designed. But it didn't help. It has a really nice roll-off and real nice impedance characteristics, but that didn't help. So I was poking around, and I found out why I wasn't getting any drive. I'd left a wire off. There's two resistors to the base of the push-pull amp, and I left the switched 12 volts off of the top resistor, and so that explains why it was kind of dead. But then when I got the voltage right, then the thing wanted to jump into some strange oscillations under higher drive. So I started messing with put a resistor. Variable resistor in my BIOS, and fiddle around with different drives, and things just started acting really odd. And I would have expected harmonics, at 3933 I would have expected something like you know, 7866 as the second harmonic. But I was seeing stuff like 4.5 megs and 5.9 megs. I had no idea how that stuff was happening. Long story short, I started fiddling with the emitter resistors and putting higher power and emitter resistors in, and things started getting more stable, and so I got a good stable amp now, I think. But now I have some questions about the mixer, the SA612. I've hitched up a PC headset, an Electret, and got the DC into the Electret mic, and got good audio coming out of it. Got a little jack mounted, so I'm fixing to put an LM, what is it, a 358? The one, it's either a 358 or a 318. I think it's a 358, the one that has a single power supply. Yeah, LM358. That's what I'm planning to use to take the audio out of the mic and drive that op amp. I've never played with a single supply op amp before, so I'm going to try that. But yeah, I got a question about the double sideband coming out of the mixer there. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, your struggles there sound very familiar, and I found another applicable quote from Rocky here. He lists the problems that radio amateurs can face with solid state power amplifier circuits, and they're all very familiar. He says one, parasitic oscillations, sometimes at unpredictable frequency. He calls this the number one transistor zapper. Second problem, overheating. Third problem, poor RF output or collector efficiency. Four, interaction with the oscillator stage leading to chirp. And five, quantum mechanical necromancy. He has in parentheses, the transistor simply turns up its toes and dies. Not even atomic physicists can tell you why. So don't feel bad, Mike, if there's some mystery involved in there. Yeah, I mentioned Papa Legba before. I think I had him in a QST article where I was, again, quoting from this article from Rocky. It's really a nice piece of work. I enjoyed it very much. I found it very encouraging on bad days when I was sort of branding my fingers with the outline of an MRF-476 transistor. Yeah, but no, it sounds like you're on the right path there. You got to be careful with the emitter resistors, because you change those things just a little bit and you're making really big changes in the biasing conditions of the stage. You know, you probably got one resistor that's completely bypassed and one that's unbypassed, and those values are selected, you know, pretty carefully, and that determines the amount of, so the unbypassed one determines the amount of degenerative feedback that you're going to get, and the bypassed one usually sets the quiescent emitter and collector current. So you can make a lot of changes with just a small amount of change in the values of those resistors. The NE602 with the double as a balanced modulator, I think one of the things you got to watch out for is kind of putting too much audio into it. I don't think it takes a lot to get it to produce the desired double sideband output. And I've driven them with 741 op amps and with LM386 op amps. And I think you really have to just be careful about not putting too much audio in there, again, because it doesn't take too much. But yeah, what is your question about the double sideband signal coming out at KL7R and 0HBR?
Yeah, KL7R back. Well, I'm just surprised. You know, originally I had I've got a crystal and a tuning capacitor and a couple other capacitors hitched up to pin 6 and 7 of the oscillator input there. and it's oscillating away. And originally I was taking my oscillator output from right off the crystal and driving the preamp with that, driving the driver RF driver amp with that. But then I thought, you know, part of my problems was getting RF back into my oscillator, and so I moved the input to my driver amp to the output of the 612, and I was surprised to find that there was signal on the output of the SA612. I would have expected no RF carrier on pin 5 unless I had an unbalanced condition on pin 2. You know, I would have expected no carrier output unless I had audio input into the mixer. But I got a nice steady carrier output. But if I apply audio to pin 2, then it starts to, you know, like AM, squish down the peaks towards the center there. So I was expecting no output from the balanced modulator, but I'm seeing a carrier there. Over.
Yeah, it depends on the, you know, it depends a lot on the circuit. I mean, how much I think you may be just talking about how much carrier suppression you're getting from the NE602 and balanced modulator. And some of the circuits provide quite a bit of suppression. I've played with a number of different ones and found a pretty big variation in the amount of carrier suppression that you do get. And I finally settled on a little circuit that is essentially derived from the K2, and this is the circuit that I'm using in my 20-meter DSB rig, and it seems to provide quite a bit more carrier suppression than some of the standard, especially single-ended circuits that you see in. I started out with a circuit similar to what you see in the Wee Willie. We were discussing the Wee Willie last week, and I found that there was quite a bit of RF coming out, as you say, even when there's no audio input. And it's not supposed to be that way. So then I switched over to a circuit that is like the K2, and it essentially involves putting up a bit of a resistance network between the two pins that can serve as, I think, audio input, but it allows you to balance. Essentially, you're fine-tuning the balance, the bias on those inputs, I think, if I remember correctly. But with the K2 circuit, there was a lot more carrier suppression, but I don't know if it's that much to worry about, Mike. I think you're probably just seeing a little bit of a bleed through and unbalanced. The other thing is that you can have, you know, that the isolation between circuit elements isn't perfect, so you could just be seeing some of the leads are actually picking up a little bit of the energy from the oscillator there, and just getting some sort of bleed through there. But that's I think something that everybody struggles with when you're working with DSB gear. KL7R M0HBR.
Yeah, I mean, I've got enough drive off that unbalanced carrier output, unbalanced output there. I mean, that's to get me a full 5 watts on my amp. So I can maybe I just need to drop the drive. I don't know, but I mean, I'm used to having a lot better carrier suppression than that. So I'll have to take a peek here. You know, the warbler here has a crystal filter following the mixer, and I'm not doing that. I'm running direct DSB, and he might not care about the carrier coming out because he's cutting that carrier off and the other sideband. I was hoping for carrier suppression. I was hoping for double sideband to start with, and then maybe cut off one of the sidebands. I was not expecting to have to cut off the carrier and one of the sidebands. So I'm digging through my K2 book here, see if I can find that circuit, Bill.
Well, let's see.
two other things I did were software related, one of which I can remember. Two of which I can remember. I sent you this, when we're through talking about this double sideband rig, remind me about the two software items. TiddlyWiki and AFU Nothing. I wrote them down here. Remind me about them. I'll dig through the K2 book and see if I can figure that out. I'm kind of happy. It sure was a pain to get this far. I was seeing so much garbage in my oscilloscope there, and seeing this thing oscillate on 5 and 4 megs, or 6 and 4 megs. I could not understand that one. That was maybe it was a subharmonic and multiples of a subharmonic or something. It was ugly. But when I got to, you know, solid emitter resistors and got the bias right, it seems pretty solid. One thing I was noticing is that it would be okay into a dummy load, and then I'd hitch an antenna to it, and it would just jump all over the place. So it was really something. But I did check into the net a second time, and had no trouble checking in 5 watts. I've checked in a couple times now. I was hoping to get enough audio drive tonight to be able to check in, but I think I'll have to do that tomorrow there. Back to you, Bill. What you been up to? M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, I just wanted to mention a couple things. The balanced modulator circuit that I'm talking about, it's on the SSB board. I think it's the optional SSB board for the K2. And if you can't find it, let me know and I think I found mine on the web. I don't have any books here, but I just searched for it, and without too much digging, I found it. And I think the schematics are on the web, so you could find it there. And yeah, well, you know, your experiences with the putting the low pass filter in there are very familiar. I mean, a lot of times you'll get the amplifier working and you'll think, yay, I got it. But you haven't put the low pass filter in yet. And of course, as a good citizen, you need the low pass filter. Here in the UK, they seem to be particularly concerned about this. And on a couple of postings to QRPL, I mentioned that I had not yet built an LP low-pass filter or something like that, and I get these kind of really concerned emails giving the impression that the authorities might be kicking my door down at any moment if I fail to wire in the required coil and two capacitors. I thought it was a bit exaggerated. It was still very much at the experimental stage, and RF output at this point was about 0.5 watts, so I don't think it was going to cause any kind of electromagnetic catastrophes here. But good advice to have the LP filter in there, but it's not as easy as it seems. A lot of times this kind of advice comes from folks who really haven't struggled with it or haven't struggled with it lately, but you can have a chance that you can have that amplifier stage working, and then you put the LP filter in, and it doesn't work anymore. Or like you say, it works into the dummy load, but not into the to the antenna. And I found a good article on low-pass filters for QRP transmitters. I'm sure you have it in the shack. You probably just don't realize it. It's on the AMQRP disc. It's in issue number 6. It's by Phil DeCare, or I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, but it's Phil, WB7AEI. And he's got a really interesting article about low-pass filters for QRP transmitters. And, you know, it's a reminder that the when you, depending on the circuit that you're dealing with and the amount of power output that you're dealing with, the low-pass filters that you plug in there, some of them are just for the purpose of cutting off the harmonics. He points out that you have to be careful about the cutoff frequency you select. He also points out that by using the LT Spice or some of the other software, you can do a lot of the number crunching very quickly. But he also reminds us that a lot of these filters are also doing impedance transformation, because if you want to get more than 1 watt out of these transmitters, more than 1 watt or so, you need to bring the impedance down significantly from the 50 ohms that we normally have at the end of our coax. So anyway, good article. I recommend that. I found it very, very useful. What am I doing here? I'm ashamed to say that I have not been melting much solder. I don't know why lately, but I continue to play with the double sideband 20 meter rig that our listeners are probably getting tired of hearing about. I gotta say, the receiver on that thing sounds just so good. There's something about a double sideband receiver, even though it's as broad as a barn door, and even though conditions have been really bad, I love to turn that thing on, and I have it running into a little amplified computer speaker, and it just sounds so good. Sometimes I turn it on, and even if the QSO is in Ukrainian or Serbo-Croatian, and I can't understand a word of it, I just like to listen to it because it sounds so good. There's something about double sideband receivers, so I leave that on. And I too have to now struggle with the low pass filter for my amplifier stage I have set up on this thing. Spring is about to be sprung here in London, Mike. We get a late spring in the UK, but so of course thoughts turn to antennas, and I am thinking about making an expedition up to the roof of the house here. I'm thinking of going back vertical. I started out at this QTH with vertical antennas, and then I went horizontal, and I think I'm better off in this urban environment with something vertical. So in the latest edition of Sprat, they have an ad for antennas, for poles for an antenna. And I think it's the name. I'm going to pull out a condition of Sprat. I hope I can find it to give the guy a mention here. But the fellow is selling fiberglass telescoping antennas, and at a reasonable price. So I think I'm going to get one. And I'm looking for antenna circuits that I could use to get on 40 and 20 and 17. There's an interesting circuit in the new Sprat using 5 meters of ribbon line as the antenna feeding into an LC circuit. It's in the antennas and anecdotes section. I thought that was interesting. So it's almost antenna time. Oh, and while I'm up on the roof, I have to adjust the satellite, the Sky TV satellite antenna that we use. This is always a kind of a fun process, because what I do is my son goes downstairs with a little family radio service walkie-talkie and watches the signal strength meter on the TV screen as I move this little antenna around. I guess it's about the size of almost the size of a large frying pan, and I have to wiggle it just a little bit one way or another to get the satellite signal up to acceptable levels. So we have Monday off here. Day first is a holiday in Europe, and so I may be up on the roof doing antenna stuff. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right. Well, that sounds like a plan there, Bill. Try it. Go to your local toy store and buy a couple of Slinkies. If you get the metal ones, they're coated with zinc. And you can solder that zinc, and you could put two or three of them together, or at least one or two of them together. And I have taken and done that. I have on a vertical pole stretched a Slinky up, and loaded that up with an antenna tuner, and that works pretty well. I bet you could get down on 80 meters with that. Have a counterpoise wire strung out somewhere, and work that against your vertical, or maybe you could use it against the rain gutter flashing of your building, I bet you a Slinky would get you some inductive loading there that would work for you. And I'm looking at this this balanced modulator circuit there in the K2 SSB, and it's pretty simple, really. It's using balanced input instead of unbalanced input, they just put a balancing pot and then they control the amount of DC voltage going into V plus and V minus of the mixer on pin 1 and 2. So, yeah, I'd be able to handle that. I don't understand why they have a diode on their double sideband output. I don't know why they need a diode on their output. Maybe that's to block DC, but it would seem like it would also block the negative going peaks on the double sideband. Can't understand that one. Well, cool. Yeah. Have you ever built a LC L network, like a series L shunt C, and you can flip them around and load up just about anything. Have you got antenna tuners laying around, or have you got old monster coils you can throw in the line there? I think you'd have good luck there with a counterpoise and a Slinky there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, thanks for the mention of the Slinky trick. I spotted that diode on that circuit too, and I never could figure out why they had that in there either. So I never used it. I don't think it's that important. Yeah, I think you've obviously found the circuit I was talking about. And we had some discussion. I was trying to figure out how it worked and what the what that pot does. And I think you're right. I think it adjusts the it sort of fine tunes the balance of the bias on the two inputs. And I think I noticed a really dramatic increase in carrier suppression once I built that circuit into the rig. I found a little pot, a really tiny little pot that the two pins were perfectly spaced for placement on pins 1 and 2 of the NE602. So in my version, the pot, the two little trimmer pot and the two little pins coming off go directly and soldered directly onto the NE602 pins for 1 and 2. And it works out. It's very, very compact. And I'm telling you, you tune that thing down, you see that carrier just disappear. You know, I was thinking with your circuit, watch out for the, take a look at what's going on the audio pins. You might have a lot of hash, a lot of noise going in there, even if you're not speaking into the mic, that the op amp that you have in there might be generating a lot of hash, a lot of noise, and that could be unbalancing things there for you and causing the RF to come out even without what you think of as AF input. Just a thought. Yeah, I have lots of really ugly, you talk about ugly construction, I have really ugly antenna tuners. There's a little kind of staircase that goes up to the hatch that goes to the roof. This is a style of construction I think folks in the States would be unfamiliar with, but very common here in the UK. And we don't use the hatch up to the roof, the only time we use it is when I go up there to work on antennas, and it's all locked up and secure, but the stairwell, because it's not being used regularly, it becomes available for things like storing books, and several of these steps hold my rather bizarre-looking antenna tuners, which are built on pieces of wood and have just various coils and big, ugly bread slicer capacitors on there. And, I use the familiar shunt-to-ground coil on top or vice versa kind of circuits. I have one for built that I use mostly for 40 meters and one for 20 and up, and I have little switches to go back and forth between them. They seem to work out pretty well. And I don't know, I thought about the kind of helically loaded antenna for 40. I don't know, just check out this this little antenna circuit in the Antennas and Anecdotes part of Strat. It looks I've seen it before. It looks very interesting. I'm not quite sure how it works and why that particular length is apparently so critical. They even have a similar length for the counterpoise. My current horizontal antennas, I think I might just use them as the perfect counterpoise for the transmitting element. A bunch of fishing poles up there, but I far prefer to work on circuits at the workbench than to be up on the roof working with antennas. I know most guys are exactly the opposite, but I prefer the workbench work to the antenna work. That's strange. Maybe it's because it's kind of weird to go up on the roof here. There are so many people around this area, so densely populated, that you can't really work on your antennas without kind of getting the hairy eyeball from some of your neighbors. What else? I uploaded a bit of video. I am continuing with the theme of sending reports from locations that we visit. I sent up one when we were in the Swiss Alps. This month we were in Barcelona on the beach, and so I recorded a video message to SolderSmoke listeners, and we've uploaded that to the site, so you'll see Barcelona SolderSmoke there. I actually want to do an audio message, but I can't figure out how to record it on my wife's MP3 player. So we have the video camera, so I just tell her to turn the camera on, and I record an audio-video message. It's the only reason it's video is because I'm technically challenged and can't get the straight audio thing to go. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I've been on the air with my 40-meter DSB rig. I made a few contacts with that last weekend. I think it was after you told me that HF conditions were okay, and they were. I worked into continental Europe with that thing. So that's, I guess, I'm getting close to making what we used to call old buzzer transmissions, Mike. On a ham, if you really rambled on a long time, they'd tell you were making an old buzzer transmission. So there you have one, KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill, KL7R here. You might be able to go to your equivalent of Radio Shack and get some antenna twin lead and run it from your slinky vertical and counterpoise down into your shack, and then put your tuner down in the shack so you don't have to climb up on the roof and adjust the tuner. That way you could jump between vans. I've done that. I've used the twin lead and loaded up my vertical over here. I've got a 32-foot mast I used to hold up one end of my horizontal loop, and I've loaded that thing up with twin lead against my chain link fence, and that works okay. Try the slinky thing. You'll have some issues with trying to push it all the way up on your mast. Your mast won't be able to support the slinky at the top. But that's good. Well, I was going to mention the two software things I did this week. I found out about TiddlyWiki. If you're a geek, that's a really fun thing to do. It's a wiki, which is sort of like a journal, and it's got URLs in it and stuff like that. But what's interesting about TiddlyWiki is that it's all the whole database and program and data are in a single HTML file. It's all the most hairy JavaScript you've ever seen in your life. It's like a little mini database you can pack around on your a USB stick and upload. If you go to my projects page on my homepage there, kl7r.ham-radio.ch, if you click on projects, you can see what that TiddlyWiki looks like. And if you go to the TiddlyWiki site, you can get one and start playing yourself. I recommend it. It's pretty geeky, and the technology is is sort of nuts. I like it. I've been playing with VMware, which is a way of running multiple virtual machines under your PC, and I sent a note to QRPL on how to run AFU NOPIX. That AFU NOPIX is a ham radio Linux on a CD-ROM. It's a bootable CD-ROM, I sent notes on how to run NOPIX and Windows at the same time, so you can play around with ham radio NOPIX if you want to. A ham radio Linux in a virtual machine under Windows. So sent those notes. I got that working. I don't use it much, but people seem to be talking about Linux on the QRPL, so I passed that on.
As it ends, just to wrap up here, I find on TiddlyWiki sounds amazing. Well, I'm going to be buying one of these combination MP3 phones, telephones, and digital cameras. I'm tired of walking around with all this junk in my pockets. So I'm going to get one little device that does all three functions. Maybe I could load TiddlyWiki up onto it, and I guess suppose that would turn it into a an all band EHF HF transceiver. That'd be quite a trick. Sounds like we're heading in that direction with the software-defined radios. Who knows? There was on QRPL, you mentioned QRPL, there was a guy was out there selling a Barbados receiver. This is the Doug DeMaw-designed simple SSB receiver. That was my first Superhead receiver. Superhead, not SSB, but it was my first Superhead receiver that I built. I still have it sitting here. I love that circuit. So I tried to buy it, and I realized that that would have been my fourth Barbados receiver. I was willing to pay $75 for it, but somebody else beat me to it. I actually have two of them in operation right now. A third is kind of sitting in the projects box, but it's a neat little receiver. The board was a little bit too tightly packed for me, but it would have been cool to have the parts. So I hope whoever got it has fun with it. It's a neat little circuit. You mentioned interesting technical projects. I regularly visit Hackaday, and our friends at Hackaday really have been outdoing themselves lately. There's been some really cool stuff there, including homebrew, radio-controlled, small helicopters. And homebrew, radio-controlled, inside-the-house airplanes. Really, really kind of neat stuff. The twin lead for the antennas. I've done that. I wish we had a local equivalent of Radio Shack here. We don't, especially in this neighborhood. It's very electronically parts. It's not an electronics friendly zone. When I was back in the States a year or so ago, we threw some twin lead into the box and brought it back. So I have that here, and that's what I do. I go through the antenna tuners are inside on the little ladder that I mentioned, and so I can adjust them without having to go out into the out up onto the roof. That's the scheme. More sunshine here. My batteries are getting charged up here. My Volkswagen solar panels have now fully charged my gel cell battery to the point where I had to actually remove them. So we're capable now of running the Heathkit HW8 completely solar powered here. We've got an abundance of solar energy here. And finally, hamfests are coming. I believe there's a hamfest, or a rally as they call it here in the UK, out in the west of London. I regularly go to this one. I think they're going to have it next weekend. So I may go out there and maybe getting a solder smoke report on the West London Hamfest. I think it's at the Kemper racetrack. I always like that one, so I'm going to go out there. Mike, I think it's time before we wrap it up. It's time for solder smoke mailbag. Got a few very nice emails this week. I'll just mention two. Alan W2AEW sent a very nice email about how he enjoys solder smoke and how it makes him wish he had more time for home brewing. He mentions that he has a very long commute. I think he said 60 miles each way each day. And I kind of said I hoped for him that it was in a train, and I suggested that he might follow Thomas Edison's example and if you had a long train ride, you can work out some way to do at least part of the home brewing on the train, although that probably would raise some Homeland Security eyebrows. But it doesn't really matter because poor Alan is in his car, and he said the only thing he can do is a virtual home brewing while commuting. And Alan, if you're listening to this out there in traffic, hang in there, buddy. And we wish you luck in your homebrew projects, virtual or otherwise. And then I got some really nice email from Nigel, M0NDE. He's in Dover, which is down in extreme southeast England, and it's right where the White Cliffs of Dover are, and where you get the Euro Tunnel train over to the continent. I've been down there a few times, and Nigel describes a really excellent community of home brewers down there. It made me jealous because we don't have any real equivalent up here in London. But he and his colleagues have been involved in some very interesting projects, including a kind of homebrew version of the MFJ antenna tuner using what we call the 2-pound or pound shop radio, a real cheap little shortwave radio that they've been selling in some of the stores here, and with an antenna dipper circuit. And he sent details, and I relayed them to you, Mike, and maybe we can discuss them on an upcoming issue of Solder Smoke, because it does look like a real interesting circuit. Yeah, so I'm running out of topics here too, and I guess we've about filled up. I don't know, I think we may have gone over the half hour here that we usually shoot for, but that's okay. I hope everybody enjoys the show, and please send us some email feedback. We'd love to hear from you. I guess the easiest way to do it these days is just to you can send it to the email on the website, or you could send it to n2cqr@awrl.net, and it'll get to me, and I'll pass it on to Mike. So I think that's about it, Mike. I'll turn it back over to you, KL7R, M0HPR.
All right, Bill. I think it's your Monday. It's Sunday. Because it's Saturday here. It's Sunday morning. It's worked out again well here. I got a little confused on the days. Well, shoot, on your rally there, maybe you could keep an eye open for a nice set of Hi-Z headphones or something like that. Keep them in mind for me. They're be really cool to get a set of them. Well, thanks for your help again, Bill, on this carrier balance thing, and I'll have to give that a shot here later on tomorrow. I think I'm gonna hit the rack tonight. Have a good day today, Bill. M0HBR 73 KL7R.
Okay, Mike. Maybe I'll find you a set of headphones that they used at Bletchley Park. They occasionally pop up. That'd be cool. I'll keep my eyes out for you. 7-3, have a good evening. Yeah, it's Sunday morning here. And 7-3 to all the listeners out there in Solder Smoke Land. M0HBR clear.